Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 15, Bali Maharaj Conquers the Heavenly Planets, text number 29 and through 31. Ujashvinam balim jetum na samartosti kaschana bhava vidho bhavan vapi varjayet vaisvaram harim. Ujashvinam, so powerful. Balim, Bali Maharaj, Chaitum, to conquer, Na, not, Samartha, able, Asti, is, Kaschana, anyone, Bhavat Vida, like you, Bhavan, you yourself, Va api, either, varjad hidva, accepting, Ishvaram, the Supreme Controller, Harim, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let's see. Vijayasyati, will conquer, na, not, ka, api, anyone, inam, him, Bali Maharaj, Brahma Tejas Samaditam, now empowered with Brahma Tejas, extraordinary spiritual power. Na, not, asya, of him, shakta, is able, pura, in front, statum, to stay, tutam antasya, of Yamaraj, yata, as, janaha, people. So, Brihaspati is instructing Indra. Bali's about to attack the heavenly planets, and he's powerful. He's describing his power in this verse here. Translation, neither you nor your men can conquer the most powerful Bali. Indeed, no one but the Supreme Personality can conquer him, for he is now equipped with the supreme spiritual power, Brahma Tejas. No one can stand before Yamaraj, no one can now stand before Bali Maharaj. Tasman nilayam utsrijya yuyam sarva trivishtapam yata kalam patikshanto yata satror viparyayaha. Therefore, waiting until the situation of your enemies is reversed, you should all leave this heavenly planet and go elsewhere where you will not be seen. Esha vipra balodarkam sampradayurjita vikramahabdeshameva pa manenam sanubando vinakshati. Translation, Bali Maharaj has now become extremely powerful because of the benedictions given him by the Brahmanas. But later he will insult the Brahmanas. He will be vanquished along with his friends and assistants. Purport. Bali Maharaj and Indra were enemies. Therefore, when Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, predicted Bali Maharaj would be vanquished, when he insulted the Brahmanas, by whose grace he had become so powerful, Bali Maharaj's enemies were naturally anxious to know when that opportune moment would come. To pacify King Indra, Brihaspati assured him that the time would certainly come, for Brihaspati could see that in the future Bali Maharaj would defy the orders of Shukracharya in order to pacify Lord Vishnu Vamanadeva. Of course, to advance in Krishna consciousness, one can take all risks. To please Vamanadeva, Bali Maharaj risked defying the orders of his spiritual master, Shukracharya. Because of this, he would lose all his property, yet because of devotional service to the Lord, he would get more than he expected, and in the future, in the eighth Manvantara, he would occupy the throne of Indra again. So one becomes powerful by pleasing the great souls, because they are connected with the source of power, the Supreme Lord Himself. So by pleasing the great souls, one receives their benedictions and blessings, and one becomes powerful. This is the situation with Bali Maharaj. He had pleased Shukracharya. Shukracharya was his guru, although he was a seminal guru, still he was very powerful, as we heard from the previous verse. And Bali had attained that Shakti. Now he's going to attack the heavenly planets with his armies. The demigods are seeing Bali come, and he looks effulgent. And Indra inquires from Brihaspati, what is the situation with Bali? Before he was defeated, now he is coming back in such a powerful way. Well, then Brihaspati enlightened Indra by explaining how he had received his power by pleasing his spiritual master. Yasya prashada bhagavad prashado, yasya prashadan nagatikutopi. That by the grace of the spiritual master one gets the grace and mercy of Krishna. And without the grace of the spiritual master, Nagati Gatopi, it's all useless. One's endeavors in spiritual life will not bring any result, any tangible result. And so one has to seek to please the spiritual master by pleasing the spiritual, one has to seek to please the Lord by pleasing the spiritual master. How is the spiritual master pleased? We always say, well, he's pleased if you follow his instructions. And that's nice. But there's more to it than that. You have to be enthusiastic to follow. Not just going through the motions. The enthusiasm is life of bhakti. Without enthusiasm, bhakti has no life. As Rupa Goswami says, utsaha nishchaya darya tat tat karma pavartana. That enthusiasm is the first principle in the execution of devotional service. So without being enthusiastic for the activities of devotional service, then we don't really benefit at all so much. I mean, if we're following but we're not enthusiastic, we get some benefit. But what is the enthusiasm? Rupa Goswami explains that that enthusiasm is to use your intelligence how to serve. Is to understand by intellectual understanding how best I can execute these orders of the spiritual master. There are three kinds of people. There's people who make things happen. There's people who watch things happening. And then there's others who wondered what happened. Hare Krishna. So we try to be the first one. We have to make things happen. Or sometimes there's another group that everything happens to them, but only when something happens to them do they react. But devotees are thinking in a proactive way how to make things happen, how to increase the quality of my service, how to become more enthusiastic in our devotional service, how to learn, how to know the scriptures better. In other words, there should be an active intelligence in everything we do to keep our mind fixed in the whole process of devotional service. Because it's more than just carrying out instructions. It's carrying out instructions in such a way that we can do it in the best possible way. And we also think how to make it even better. There's three kinds of devotees. The first class, second class, and third class. We call them three kinds of disciples. Not devotees, three kinds of disciples. First class disciple knows what the spiritual master wants without even being told and can execute the service in that way. He's the most intelligent. He observes his spiritual master very closely to learn the techniques of his spiritual master, how the spiritual master functions, what he likes, what he doesn't like, what he wants, what he doesn't do. He very carefully understands, and after understanding, he can do things without even asking. That's first class. The second class are those who are, when they're told what to do, they can do it. You tell them, okay, do this, all right, I can do it. That's second class. And that's usually where most devotees are. They're on the second class. And the third class is you tell them, and they walk away and they come back later and say, what did you say? They can't figure it out. Even if you tell them how to do it, they still can't get it. So we want to be at least second class. If you try to be first class and you're not first class, you become third class. In other words, if you try to be first class, you think you know what the spiritual want, but if you're not correct, then you're third class. That means you're doing the wrong thing. So unless you're on the first class platform, you should not try to imitate that. But second class is the safe. That one receives the instructions, one carries it out like that and tries to carry it out in the best possible way. And that will please the spiritual master. Like that. So Bali, he was very enthusiastic to please his spiritual master. But later on you'll see, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes, Bali's caught between two decisions. His spiritual master wants him to act in a certain way, and the Lord wants him to act in another way. Now, usually the spiritual master is always in line with the Lord, and therefore there's no difficulty. But in this case, Sukracharya went against the Lord and was trying to encourage his disciple, Bali Maharaj, to follow him rather than following the Lord. Bali couldn't do that, and therefore he became glorious. And that'll come up as we read. It gets really good. This is one of the most interesting pastimes. It's a very long pastime. It covers the rest of the whole eighth canto, except for the last chapter. Yeah. So it's a very interesting pastime. So here, what we can learn from this particular thing is, Yasya prasada bhagavat prasadam, yasya prasadam nagatikotopi. Try to always please the spiritual master or those who are representing the spiritual master. Just like the temple presidents or the authorities that have been given responsibility within the yatra, within the temple. They are also extensions of the temple president. They are also extensions of the spiritual master. So when we follow their instructions, we're also, because the spiritual master wants you to engage in devotional service, And then many times you work under the control or under the guidance of the temple authorities. So that temple authority becomes the representative of the spiritual master. So when we follow them, we're following the spiritual master. Same thing. Like that. There's no difference. 2 plus 2 is 4, 3 plus 1 is 4. So you might say, well, 2 plus 2 I can understand is 4, but 3 plus 1, that's a little, there's different numbers there. How could it be the same result? But it is. So we have to see things in relationship to how, what pleases Krishna by pleasing the spiritual master. And you see how powerful Bali became. You know, before he was defeated, in fact, he was on the verge of death. They took him to one mountain and revived him and got him back to life again. And then, because he pleased his spiritual master right after that, then he got everything he needed and more like that. And Sukracharya was, I mean, from a spiritual point of view, he was powerful in that way, but still he was a seminal guru. In other words, he was a family guru. He was not in... Yeah, he was also in line, but at the same time, he had... in other words, he was also becoming a guru in order to get some monetary gain. In other words, when his monetary... franchise was disturbed, that's when he went against the Lord. So although he was a powerful spiritual master, he did still have, he wasn't a pure devotee. Mm-hmm. So here, Prabhupada says, to advance in Krishna consciousness, one has to take all risks. Mm-hmm. So he's referring to Vamanadeva, and when Bali defied the orders of his spiritual master in order to follow the orders of Vamanadeva, he took a risk. And you'll see what happened after. The risk apparently initially, kind of was something that apparently put him in an awkward situation. Even the Lord even punished him. But eventually, because he was humble, he actually pleased the Lord, and the Lord became inclined to offer personal service to Bali Maharaj. That's a very amazing pastime. So one has to take all risks for the Lord. Sometimes Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada says that in the Krishna, in his lectures. One should take a risk for Krishna. But then he says that risk shouldn't be at the expense of losing your Krishna consciousness. You take a risk. You go out and preach. You go out and distribute some books. Or you, what else do you do? You might decide to go somewhere and open up a preaching center. You know, go somewhere and open up a preaching center, start a nice preaching center, and then pretty soon people will come, and then you're actually spreading Krishna consciousness. So you took a little risk, you depend on Krishna, and Krishna will send after some time. So devotees have done that, gone to different places in the world and just started to preach when there was nothing going on there. And after some time, something happens. You sit down with a pair of cartels in the public area and you start chanting, distributing a little bit of prasadam and some flyers, and you invite people to come to a program and you organize. And then pretty soon you have some followers. Then after it gets bigger and bigger, some of the followers become your assistants, and then after some time you have a reason to get a preaching center. Happens all the time. Devotees have done that. So that's a nice risk to take. Go somewhere and just start preaching.
Yeah.
And so those who have got that ability, who can lead kirtan, who know the philosophy a little bit, can do that. Of course, anybody can sing kirtan, but it's nice. So take a risk for Krishna. Prabhupada took a risk. He had no money. He had no contacts. One small little contact in America. He was 70 years old. He took a huge risk and came all by himself on a boat for 39 days without any support, without any nothing. It was just the only thing he had was the order of his spiritual master. But then, if he didn't take that risk, we wouldn't be sitting here today, that's for sure. And because he took that risk, Krishna consciousness spread around the world. Prabhupada liked that. There are devotees in our movement who like to take risks, because what it does is just shows how merciful Krishna is. When you take a risk for Krishna, you'll see how Krishna comes through. And he usually facilitates what you're trying to do. Of course, you should get approval before you take your risk. But why not take a risk? Yeah. Okay, how many are going to take a risk? Little one. Okay. Sisi Panchatattva Ki Jai. It makes the Krishna consciousness exciting. And that's, otherwise, after a while, if you don't become excited about Krishna consciousness, you wind up leaving. You have to get excited. It's really an exciting process. So taking risks like that. Prabhupada was describing when he was small how they were building a building. And you know, if you've been to India, you know how they construct buildings. They put all these bamboo poles together and they tie them. And they make this like scaffolding all around the building with these bamboo poles. It's not like the modern day stuff with the cranes and all that. And people climb up them, you know. So Prabhupada said, when I was small, they were talking about one building. Prabhupada said, yeah, I climbed to the top of that building. And the devotee said, oh, Prabhupada, you were very brave. Prabhupada said, yes, otherwise how could I come here? Meaning, how could I come to the West?
I'm still brave.
I'm still brave, yeah, he said that. Yeah, you heard that lecture, right? Yeah, he said, I'm still brave. take a chance for Krishna and just depend on Krishna's mercy. But it should be something in line with Krishna consciousness, not something that's outside of Krishna consciousness. Then you don't get the mercy. Okay, so let's see what else we got in this verse here. Yeah, and Brihaspati is assuring Indra that, don't worry, you'll get your kingdom back and you'll be victorious, but right now is not the time. So this is another interesting point. When you want to do something, one of the most important things to understand is, when's the best time to do it? It's called acting timely. You might be thinking in the right way that this is the thing you want to do, but is this the best time to do it? That's also a very subtle but very important point, is to understand things are favorable or unfavorable according to, you know, the time, place, and circumstance. Like that. Just like somebody wants to get married, but it's not the time. But if they're in a rush to get married, and then they may choose the wrong person, and then everything is lost. That's just an example. Or I want to buy something, but maybe this is not the time to buy it. Maybe I should wait. Just like, here's one. You like this one. It says if you're thinking about eating or not eating, if you're unsure, should I eat or don't eat? The answer is don't eat, if you're unsure. But it says in the month of December, you can eat. So you still have another week to go. So if you have if you're not sure whether to eat or not eat in December, of course it says if you're not sure whether to eat or not eat, don't eat. As soon as that doubt comes, it means no. But in December, you can eat. Anyway. That's Prabhupada's also. You heard that statement too, right? No? It's on Prabhupada's lecture. There's a lot of subtle things that connect with the material energy, how it works, that can make our devotional service successful or make it more difficult. Devotional service is always successful, but when you know the subtle things, just like, what are some of the subtle things we should know? When to pay your obeisances, who to pay your obeisances to. What is the best time for chanting your rounds? All these are subtle things, just like, and then we say, well, you can chant 16 rounds a day. That's nice, but the best time is Brahma Muhurta hour. That's an example. Just like if you wake up really early before 2 o'clock, don't bathe. If you bathe before 2 o'clock in the morning, it's inauspicious. Because the mode of ignorance is still prominent up until 2 o'clock. But from 2 o'clock on, you can bathe. You know, all these subtle little things. There's a whole book somebody wrote about the different omens too. Just like if you're about to go on a trip and you feel the left side of your face shaking, that means something bad is going to happen. So don't go. Or they say, here's an example. You're going out on book distribution. So you leave the temple, but you forgot something. And you're already on your way. So you want to go back. So it says if you go back, it makes everything inauspicious. Once you leave a place, you should never go back to a place. That's inauspicious. So sometimes, just like happens to me once in a while, my driver forgets something and he has to go back. So I tell him, you don't go all the way back, you go almost all the way back. And then you get out of the car, walk to the place, and get where you can, and then come back. One time I forgot my deity, and I was on my way to the airport. And I thought, if I go back, it'd be inauspicious. So I didn't go back, and they mailed the deity to me. So... So yeah, these are little subtle things that are part of the, you know, there's a whole series that's mentioned in the Krishna book. If you see somebody carrying a bucket filled with something, that's auspicious. If you see somebody carrying an empty bucket, that's inauspicious. Mm-hmm. If you see deer passing on your right side, that's auspicious. Mm-hmm. I mean, something good is happening. So there's a whole series of what we say, it's signs in nature. It's always be careful, observe how the material energy is working. Because sometimes Krishna will tell you, by the material energy, something's going to happen, and you can avoid that, that there might be something inauspicious. So one who knows these subtle omens like that, because those who really are expert at that, they can just see the material energy and they can tell you what's going to happen next. Just by looking at how the material energy is working like that. This is how prophecy works. You know, people who are prophets, prophecy works by studying the present and looking at the past, studying the past, looking at the present, and by combining these two into a study, one can understand what's going to happen in the future. Study the past, observe carefully the present, and one can understand what's going to happen in the future. Just like they say, the best prophet is a false prophet. He sees, oh, people are acting in this way, and this is what's happening now. So he warns them, change. And so when they change, then it doesn't happen, the inauspicious things. Just like Prabhupada was saying, cow killing causes wars, pestilence, diseases in the world. Yeah, so you see, we have this epidemic, pandemic, and what is it? Cow killing. People are sinful. But people don't learn, they don't learn. But we know because Krishna explains these things to us. And people will think, people say, well, soon this pandemic will be over and everything will be, no, because people are still killing cows, they're still killing babies. So it'll continue as long as they continue. Everything, people want to be happy, but they don't know how to live. Therefore, how can they be happy? I can do anything I want and be happy. No, you can't. You have to follow the laws of God and the laws of nature, which are the laws of God also, like that. Just like if you might like to eat something that's nice, but if you eat too much, then you might have to fast the next day. So the laws of nature are very powerful, and they're also very subtle, too. The subtle ones you can't see. Just like the ones we know. You look up in the sky and you see black clouds coming, and you know it's going to rain, right? Now the sign comes in the sky with the clouds. So we get this visible stuff. But there's so many other things like that. But Krishna warns you what will happen or what will not happen if you are very connected to Krishna by remembering Krishna. Krishna is always telling you what to do, what to be careful, not to go here, go, don't do this, do this, like that. That's Krishna. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions? Comments?
Oh. Thank you, Guru Maharaj, for this lecture. My question is, Shukracharya was a very powerful guru and gave so many blessings and benedictions to his disciple. How did he acquire those powers? What was the process? Because he was not a devotee, so what was...
I have to read the life of Shukracharya. If you read the life of Shukracharya, you'll find out. I have it in a book. I was reading it. He did so many things in the past to attain his position. But I forgot. I read it a few years ago, so I kind of lost memory.
Thank you.
Yeah. His previous activities gave him his present situation. And his present activities will give him his future situation.
And so we hear what happened to Bali Maharaj, because Vamadev comes, asks for those three paces of land, and then he loses everything. But what happens to Shukracharya for misleading his disciple? We don't hear anything of Shukracharya after that.
Oh, and you see, he comes up again in the ninth canto. Shukracharya's daughter, was it Sarmistra, married King Yayati, and that was a whole fiasco. Devayani and Sarmistra. One Brahmin wife and one Kshatriya wife. The Brahmin wife was the daughter of Shukracharya. I think that was Devayani.
Yeah, Sharmishta was the princess. Mm-hmm. And Devayani was Shukracharya's daughter.
Devayani was Shukracharya's daughter. She was Brahmin. Sarmistra threw her in the well. They were fighting. When you get into the ninth canto, this is the most wildest things happen in that canto. It's like, whoa. Those of you who like, you know, far out stories, ninth canto is the place. Whoa. Okay, anything else? Any other questions, comments? We got a question from...
Hare Krishna, thank you for your lecture. Only ask, this you mentioned, this nature law, something, it's somewhere written down, many these cases.
What was the question? I missed it.
Yeah, exactly was written these nature laws, these cases, these examples.
I can't understand what you're saying.
If there is some book of these omens, how to...
Omens, yeah.
Yeah, I have it. But it's in the Krishna book too. There's a lot. There's in the Bhagavatam. It's also mentioned. Prabhupada's lectures. He talks a lot about these things. But I have one book that one devotee made called Omens. It's an e-book, so I can send it to you.
Thank you.
But don't get caught up in this stuff. It's, you know, it's not directly Krishna consciousness.
Something maybe help me. This will help me because I often go and something forget and have a return, and now I have to be.
Yeah, just like Nanda Maharaj and some of the cowherd boys, they bathe too early in the morning. So one of the servants of Varuna came and captured him, brought him to Varuna for punishment. That's when Krishna came back and had to rescue his father from Varuna. But he bathed too early. It was an inauspicious time.
Hare Krishna, question from Vallabhi. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Addictions throws off the intelligence. So is it possible to be enthusiastic when you have an addiction? And are there addictions in passion and goodness or only in ignorance?
Addiction? Is that the word?
Addictions, yes.
Can you be enthusiastic when you have
addictions?
What does she mean by addictions? I'm not sure.
She's not specific, but she's asking, are there addictions in passion and goodness or only in ignorance?
Addiction means you're really attached to something. But it usually has a negative connotation, generally. So she's asking whether it's in all three modes? There's addictions in all the three modes, yeah.
And is it possible to be enthusiastic when you have an addiction?
Well, you can be, but you'll see that is a hindrance, and you have to work on that. So you can still be enthusiastic, because enthusiasm is the nature of the soul's relationship with Krishna. Yeah, you can still be enthusiastic. But these addictions might come up from time to time and make what they call dampen your enthusiasm or water it down. That can happen also. That will happen, yeah. But still, they can be enthusiastic. But we should try to avoid those addictions and replace them with what we say attachments to Krishna. Prabhupada said, all right, you're addicted to hearing Beatles sing songs, so why don't you hear Krishna conscious bhajans instead? You're addicted to eating the wrong stuff, then you eat prasadam. You're addicted to associating with certain people who are not good association, but change your association. So just the addictions are more like fixed habits. And then you have to break that habit with a new habit, with a better habit. Replacing one habit with another habit. But old habits and old addictions don't go away right away. It takes some time. Mm-hmm. Someone say, well, I'm addicted to spacing out. So... In other words, you just let your mind go wherever you want it to go. So just become addicted to chanting. And that way, wherever you are, you're chanting the holy name. And you're not spacing out anymore.
Mm-hmm. Guru Maharaj, during the course of the lecture, you said at one point, the best prophet is a false prophet. I'm a little puzzled by that choice of words. Could you explain that?
Yeah. Something is about to happen. The prophet warns you that because this is what's going to happen, because this is the way things are going. People change their ways because of the advice of the prophet, and it doesn't happen. False prophet.
Ah, okay. Thank you.
That's from a prophecy book. I didn't make that up.
I'll take that false prophet any time.
Yeah, we could say that looking at the world situation, if it continues on this way, these things will happen. But if people change, then it doesn't happen. Hmm. So he advises you that this is going to happen. So change, and people wake up and change, and it doesn't happen. False prophet.
Mm. Mm. Thank you very much.
Mm. It's kind of a loose definition, but it's there. Okay, anything else? Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.